Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. Most of us know at least a handful of constellations in the night sky, the Big Dipper or Orion or Cassiopeia, say.
Well, astronomy contributor Jean Creighton knows more than most of us, probably, but she also knows a lot more about their context. She joins us this month to talk more about constellations. Hello, Jean.
It's great to see you, Vani.
And you know, this is such a favorite time of year for me. I know a lot of people hate oncoming cold weather, but what it does for me, particularly at night, is that because the air is so clear, is the stars are so beautiful, and the moon when it's out is so beautiful, and it kind of takes my breath away.
It does, yeah.
Yeah, and not because it's cold, but because it's so beautiful.
Well, maybe that too.
maybe if I sat out there too long. But let's talk about constellations, because I have been looking. I've been enjoying like walking home, you know, as things get dark and looking up, and even in the city, being able to see quite a lot.
Yeah.
So I understand that there are some myths about constellations that persist despite your best efforts.
Or expectations, anyway. Maybe expectation. But so I think there are five most common things that people think that are not quite right. So first of all, they think that constellations are made up of really bright stars. And that is simply not true. Many of the constellations have stars that are pretty dim. And certainly in the city, you wouldn't be able to see them. But I say even in a beautiful country sky, you would need quite a bit of imagination and keen eyesight to be able to see them. The other one is that constellations are connect the dots. And I get why people think that, because we often describe patterns in those terms, right? We want to say Orion looks like a bow tie, things that people can relate to so they can remember what the shape looks like.
Well, the visual reference.
Yeah. But the fact is that in modern astronomy, a constellation is, I call it a patch of sky. But if you imagine that the sky is like a puzzle, and you cut it into 88 pieces, just like the maps that you see the states on. They're like that, cut into little segments. Each star belongs to one of those segments, and they're no orphan stars. That's another myth. People think, I see the bow tie, Orion, but where does that star just beside the belt go? It's still in Orion. Because that, if you will, that bow tie defines a larger region. So all the stars are tucked away in the protection of some constellation.
So what we think of as a constellation isn't just the stars that we draw, that we, you know, we kind of superimpose.
That's right.
So it's that chunk of sky.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. And furthermore, these stars needn't be anywhere close to each other. Because often you see on maps, you know, a map, and a map of the U.S. is a flat, let's call it a flat surface, more or less. But a constellation is, in fact, a slice of sky, because there's a third dimension to that, right? So in that line of sight, there are going to be some things that are close to you, like maybe even a planet could be in the constellation. That's not permanent. That's going to change. But this particular moment, there could be a planet, there could be a cluster of stars, like, say, the Pleiades, that are beautiful in the eastern sky now. We call them also the Seven Sisters. You can have a whole galaxy in the constellation. So there could be things that are utterly spatially unconnected. They just happen to be in the same direction.
In that sector of sky.
That's right. In that sector. Nice word. Sector is a good one. They're not all animals or creatures. Many of them are. Some people are surprised to find that the official constellations of the far south, constellations that we typically cannot see and nor were seen by the Greeks, are named after nautical instruments, because those were the first Western people on ships, who got to see the far southern constellations. So you'll get things like telescopium and triangulum and things like that.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that.
Anthea.
I mean, I knew there were a lot of things that we can't see up here just because of the tilt of the Earth and everything else, but I had no idea they were named such wonderful scientific mechanical things.
Yes. The engineers will be very pleased.
Mm-hmm.
finally, and perhaps this is the most profound point, is that I can see sometimes in people's eyes their disappointment that they can't see the so-called young man who's holding the water vase for Aquarius. This should not disturb, because some of these patterns are fairly arbitrary, and I think it's useful to remember that different cultures saw different patterns, in fact, grouped the stars differently. They didn't even see them as part of the same thing. There are similarities, like Leo is seen as a lion by many, many civilizations around the world and through time. But generally speaking, that's not the truth. So I think we can celebrate with some of the traditions. We can marvel at the beauty of the night sky. And in some cases, those patterns might be clear to us, and maybe in some cases not. But that doesn't mean we can't enjoy them and their beautiful stories.
So given that we are at the end of October, what kind of constellations might we be able to see in the night sky right now?
I would say the first thing that one should look for, just as a matter of principle, is the Big Dipper. Not because it's so great right now. It is fairly low in the northwestern sky. But for most people, that helps them locate north, and then they can get themselves situated. I describe the Big Dipper as a shopping cart with the long, curvy handle. That's going to be in the northwest. What's going to be a little off the zenith, so the point directly overhead and toward the west, is the lovely summer triangle. And I love summer. Unlike you, I love summer.
And I don't dislike summer. I just happen to really love fall.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fair enough. So the summer triangle is one of those things that holds on for much longer than the warm weather lasts. And it's made of two very bright stars and a third one that's not quite so bright, large triangle. If you're lucky enough to live in a place where you can see the Milky Way, well, then the summer triangle because it straddles the Milky Way. You have really a bright star on either side of the Milky Way, and the third one is smack in the middle. So we've got the western sky. Now, what's coming up? The key, in my opinion, fall constellation is Pegasus. That's the flying horse, and it makes a beautiful big square. For early evening observing, the square is going to look like it's standing on its corner, and off one of its corners we see Andromeda. That is the long, curvy V. And what's cool about Andromeda is that in that direction, in that patch of sky, we're going to find the most distant thing you can see without a telescope or binoculars.
Which is?
Ta-da! It's the Andromeda Galaxy.
Ooh!
A whole galaxy.
We can see a whole galaxy.
Just like that, with a naked eye. You do need a dark sky. But if you have even a modest pair of binoculars, again, a dark sky, a modest telescope, you can see the very core of the galaxy, the literally many hundreds of millions of stars in that nucleus of that galaxy. And we are on a collision course with the Andromeda Galaxy. I say we, I mean our whole galaxy, the Milky Way. So we have about 3 billion years before we become a very large merged galaxy.
So you and I probably won't be around for that.
This is not going to be a major concern for us.
Okay, good. Good. So I can sleep well tonight and not...
I wouldn't worry about it.
Well, I think what we should do is just go out and go look at the night sky.
I think that's a great idea.
All right, Gene. We will talk next month. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Bonnie.
Gene Creighton is the director of the Manfred Olson Planetarium at UW-Milwaukee and our regular astronomy contributor. Earth's a constellation.